Life on the Kalamazoo River, 1 year later. This is the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams. Workers are still trying to clean up thick tar sands oil that has settled at the bottom of the Kalamazoo River. It's been 1 year since more than 840,000 gallons of oil leaked from a broken pipeline owned by Enbridge Energy. Lindsay Smith reports life for those living near the accident site has not returned to normal yet.
See those clumpies?
Deb Miller points out black, goopy masses as big as my fist floating on the Kalamazoo River. We're behind Miller's carpet store in the village of Soresco, 6 miles downstream from where the pipe broke. Most of the oil that's left is submerged below water. There are around 200 acres that state regulators still classify as heavily contaminated. This is one of the worst. Here, I can still see oil clumps everywhere, in the water, on the banks, on strips of bright orange boom. Workers in neon vests dot the riverbanks. I pick up a faint smell, sort of like nail polish remover. Miller says she certainly doesn't sit out and enjoy the view anymore. She's used to waking up to the sound of airboats and helicopters. She's still drinking bottled water because she's worried her well could become contaminated. Miller's learned more than she's ever cared to know about pipelines and wishes she could move away from her nightmare.
The home that we live in was my husband's family home. But if it was up to me, I would have been gone the week of the spill.
Many have left. Miller says that's changed her neighborhood forever.
I don't blame anybody for getting out. There's too much unknown.
I try talking to people really close to the spill site. Door after door, no one answers. Some of the homes are obviously empty. 3 people answered the door but refused to talk to me. A big black SUV pulls up as I'm walking back to my car. Self-described outdoorsman Craig Ritter jumps out and introduces himself. He's from Jackson. He's been kayaking this section of the Kalamazoo River for years. He says the river looked like black death the day after the spill happened.
The river was black. You couldn't even hear the water. The water going over the rocks didn't sound like water going over the rocks. It almost sounded like a kid sucking on a super thick milkshake. I mean, it was just...
We go behind an abandoned house with a port-a-john for workers parked in the driveway. Ritter says the river looks a lot better on the surface. Then he pokes a stick into the shallow water. A blue oil sheen bubbles up along with some black tar-like substance.
Horrible or what? And I wanna go for a swim?
No one has been able to fish or swim in this part of the river for a year. Officials hope to open part of the river to recreation by the end of next month. Ritter looks down, wipes the sweat from his forehead, and shakes his head.
Unfortunately, I don't think life on the river is gonna be the same.
In downtown Marshall, I meet Reynald Stone. He goes by Big Ray. He and his son, Little Ray, cool off in the shade near a city fountain. Big Ray tells me the oil spill didn't change his life too much. His son chimes in, though, reminds his dad they haven't gone fishing at all this year.
Actually, they float, with their floaties on, they float inside the river with their fishing poles and fish. Now they messed that up. Can't do that no more.
Enbridge promises they're here until the spill site is clean. But Big Ray is cynical. He thinks Enbridge is going to do whatever it has to get by, and that's it. So he's not too sure he'll let his son go swimming or fishing in the river anytime soon. For the Environment Report, I'm Lindsay Smith.
There are a lot of questions about the long-term health of wildlife around the spill site. We'll hear more about that tomorrow. That's the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams.